I had two sermons to give to you before I left. I gave you the one last time. And just as a quick recap of what I spoke about last time, because this week's sermon is going to be a continuation of the thought and kind of a part two of that in a way. Last week I talked about worshiping in spirit and in truth. And what does that mean? And I think it's important for us to understand that, because Christ said that, you know, those who worship the Father must worship in spirit and truth. So if we don't even know what that means, it's going to be hard to fulfill that. And he did give us a command that we can keep. And so we went through what that means. And a couple, just to recap a couple of points, are there are not a lot of different ways to worship God. It says those who worship God must worship him in spirit and in truth. And this means a number of things, but one of the things it also means is it's according to his word, truth, as well as by God having put his spirit in us, and that spirit doing its work and having the desired outcome with inside of us is what it means to worship in the spirit part of it as well. And as well as coupled with the truth, the intent of what God meant to have happen with the law, with God's spirit in us, and the work that's being done inside of us in our very hearts, so that we end up becoming a new creation. And that worship that we do is not just something we come here and do on the Sabbath. That is a work and a worship that our lives should reflect week by week. And another piece we discuss is that there is a tendency in humans to short-circuit that process. We want to kind of take a shortcut and get to the end quicker by a lot of times establishing our own righteousness in the middle of that. We stop, we say, hey, I've kind of, you know, this is what I think is the thing to do, and we end up doing our own righteousness, our own rituals, our own things, as was demonstrated by the leaders of the day. Christ's day, they stopped with the intent of what God designed the law for, and they established their own righteousness and their own things that they did and laws and rituals. And what ended up happening is, when that happens, is they could not see the very Christ himself as he stood before them, nor could they understand what he intended by the law or the words, nor could they see the work that he did as he healed people and did things for them. Now, the very lawgiver was before them explaining to them what the intent is and the outcome of the law, and they would not have anything to do with it. So it is very much a dangerous situation if we stop and establish our own righteousness in ways and short-circuit the process, that we are no longer looking to worship him in the way he intended in spirit and truth. We also learn that there is not a liberal or conservative way to keep God's law. There is only the way that Christ, the lawgiver, intended it to be kept. And it is for us to grow and to discern and to understand and seek that more and more. And the results of that are greater faith to God, greater love, and us becoming something that is fashioned in his image. So this is something that is done throughout the week, and it is something that is a very serious thing. And what I would like to do before I depart is to cover another topic that's along the same lines. And the reason that I'm doing that is that these two sermons are more at the core heart, spirit, and intent of things, that are messages that can be taken and can be put inside and can apply over the coming years as you navigate life. This is and gets down to the heart of the matter of what it means to be a Christian over the coming years. Now, if you would permit me during this sermon, I would like to relay just a couple of things, and I don't normally do this, but if it's okay, and I don't want to do it to draw any attention to myself at all, but just some of the things that God has taught me over the past 9 years of being here. If that's okay, I would just like to maybe, you know, shed some color on some of the things, you know, as I go through this, just a couple here and there that have happened, that things that God has taught me and things that I have learned. And I guess you could kind of think of this as an icebreaker just on the way out. So normally you give these when you show up, but maybe, you know, if that's okay, I'll just add a few points in there. That's all, just to kind of put some color on things. Now, the topic for the day is found in Acts 13, 21 through 22. And there's a very interesting statement that is said here by Paul in a sermon, Acts 13, 21, verse 22. As Paul was speaking, he mentions a very interesting statement, and we quote this all the time. It is that King David was a man after God's own heart. And we say, you know, we say that statement over and over and over, and we talk about it, but do we really understand what that means? Because Paul it looks like when you look back in the original where this was quoted of David, it just says that, you know, David was a man after God's own heart. But Paul adds something onto the end of that. Let's read in Acts 13, verse 21. It says, afterwards they asked for a king, so God gave them Saul, the son of Kish, a man of the tribe of Benjamin, for 40 years. And when he had removed him, he raised up for them David as king, to whom also he gave testimony. And he said, I have found David, the son of Jesse, a man after my own heart, who will do all my will. Now, that last statement is a very important statement and is the sets the tone and the pace for us to think about in our lives. Because when we read about that and we read about the coronation of David, where David came and, you know, I mean, Samuel came to anoint the king, God said, I don't look on the outside. You think it, you know, all these young men who are before you may look like they should be king, but I look at the heart. A lot of times we see that and read that and say, well, God's just looking at, you know, whether I have good intentions or not. You know, and, you know, people look outwardly, but, you know, I'm trying to do the right thing, but God's looking at my heart to see, you know, I tried. I have the right motives. I'm trying. That is not what that is saying. And this statement right here elaborates on that. It says, I found David, a man after my own heart, who will do all my will. Who will do all my will. And what I'd like to go through today is just, there's just a couple simple examples, because brought out in this scripture right here are two people. One is Saul and one is David. And what he said is that David is one who was set up and who would do all of my will, whereas Saul was removed and was taken away from being king. And why is that? And let's go through this, because I think that if you contrast these two people, there are some things that will become clear, and we'll see what the intent is of what God is saying by this. So let's turn back to 1 Samuel 13. We'll spend a little bit of time in Samuel. 1 Samuel 13, there are some events that surrounded the happenings of this very, why God said this, both about David and God said this about Saul. And let's go back and let's read those and see how and what this means. 1 Samuel 13, verses 5, we'll read. It says, then the Philistines gathered together to fight with Israel, 30,000 chariots and 6,000 horsemen, and people as the sand which is on the seashore, and the multitude. And they came up and encamped in Michmash to the east of Beth-Aven, where the men of Israel saw that they were in danger, for the people were greatly distressed. And what did they do? They hid in caves and thickets and rocks and holes and pits. And some of them crossed over the Jordan to the land of Gad and Gilead. So they saw this tremendous army, and their people were afraid. I mean, they're hiding, caves, thickets, anything that they can get cover in. They're in holes in the ground all over the place. And it says, for Saul, he was still in Gilgal, and all the people followed him trembling. So you can imagine this situation. This is a tough place to be in if you're the leader of the people, is that you're up against an army that's really devastating, and the people are just afraid. Their knees are knocking, they're hiding, they're trembling. And what did Saul do? Verse 8, it says, he waited 7 days according to the time set by Samuel. So Samuel said, wait 7 days, I'll come and we'll offer. And, you know, he gave him explicit instructions. Now, by the time it was getting close to the 7 days, it says, but Samuel did not come to Gilgal, and the people were scattered from him. So not only were they afraid, now they're starting to run and abandon and jump ship and leave him and be gone. And so Saul here, you know, said, well, Samuel said he was coming after 7 days and he's not here. So he made a choice and he made a decision here. And what did he do? In verse 9, it says, Saul said, bring a burnt offering and peace offering here to me. And he offered the burnt offering. Now it happened as soon as he was finished presenting the burnt offering that Samuel came, and Saul went out to meet him that he might greet him. And Samuel said, what have you done? He could already see this. Now what was Saul's response? And you look at this, and this is what separates David from Saul. And you'll see this repeated over and over again. Saul said, when I saw that the people were scattered from me, and that you did not come within the appointed days, and that the Philistines gathered together at Michmash, then I said, the Philistines will now come down on me at Gilgal, and I have not made supplication to the Lord. Therefore, I felt compelled and offered a burnt offering. Now you'll notice what's happening here. If you think about this, it almost sounds reasonable, doesn't it? I mean, it actually does sound rational and reasonable that, well, you know what, there's an army, the people are scattered, you didn't show up on time, you know, the Philistines are going to come down, and you know what, I have not made my peace or my supplications to God, and therefore I feel it's very important when I go to battle that God be involved. It almost sounds reasonable, doesn't it? It almost sounds like that's the right thing to do, if you think about it. And so he offered a burnt offering. And then in verse 13, though, Samuel said to Saul, "You have done foolishly. You have not kept the commandment of the Lord your God, which he commanded you. For now the Lord would have established your kingdom over Israel forever, but your kingdom now shall not continue. The Lord," and this is where the statement comes in, "the Lord has sought for himself a man after his own heart, and the Lord has commanded him to be commander over his people, because you have not kept what the Lord commanded you." And what we'll find here when you start to look at Samuel and his life is a number of reoccurring themes. And what I would like for us to ask ourselves today is, when we look at Saul and we look at David, where do you think in your heart you end up more closely aligning with? And the reason I say this is because going forward in our spiritual lives, in leadership, in all that we do, living like Saul is not good enough. When you look at how Saul did, he mostly did the right thing. I say mostly. He mostly, 90%, he waited almost 7 days. He almost did the right thing. He almost was fully there. Now, if we were to take the way a lot of times we think about that God looks on the heart, and we say, well, God will understand, my intentions were good, and I wanted to make sure I didn't go to battle before supplications before God, that's exactly kind of how I think, you know, I myself and we have used it in the past, is to say that God's looking at my intent, that I have the right motive. And Saul seemed like he had the right motive. But you know what? Samuel said, "You have done foolishly." God is seeking. Remember what we talked about last time. God is seeking those to worship in spirit and truth. He is saying the same thing. He is seeking for himself a man after his own heart who will do, as Paul expounded, his whole entire will, not 90% of it. There is a difference. And you know what? There's a difference in the outcome. And what I would like to propose to us today as we look at this in our lives and the journey is, what is the outcome that we are experiencing in our lives? Because if you live like Saul, you will get results like Saul. If you live like David, you will get results like David. It is not an ambiguous equation. And therefore, it is important for us to look inside and to see, am I a man after God's own heart who seeks to do his entire will, the whole will of God? Or am I doing enough and I kind of cave? Maybe it's the pressure of the people, as Saul did. Maybe it's this, or maybe I said, well, it doesn't seem like this is happening right. Is that, which boat are you in? And let's go through this and to understand that it is very, very important to understand that we are to become like David, a man after God's own heart who seeks to do his entire will. And again, it has to do with his will, doing his will. So let's look at another example. What I like to do is go through just two examples here. One is Saul first, how he handled a situation. Secondly is David in almost an identical situation. If you think about it, they're almost the same thing happening. Let's look at how both of those reacted to the same situation. First, 1 Samuel 15 over a couple chapters. Let's look at this. 1 Samuel 15. First Samuel 15, verse 1. It's a story we're familiar with, but let's understand and think about those themes we talked about that Saul always ran into or did. It says, verse 1, "Samuel also said to Saul, 'The Lord sent me to anoint you over his people, over Israel. Now therefore heed the voice of the words of the Lord. Thus says the Lord of hosts, I will punish Amalek for what he did to Israel. how he ambushed him on the way when he came up from Egypt. Now go to Amalek and utterly destroy all that they have, and do not spare them. Kill both man and women, infant, nursing children, ox, sheep, camel, and donkey. First off, just as a side note, a lot of people look at this example and say, well, you know, God was harsh. You know, a lot of religious people say this shows that the God of the Old Testament was a harsh person. You know, it's not obviously not Christ, and Christ came and he preached love. What was happening here is when these people, the Amalekites, when Israel was coming out of Egypt, what they did is they stayed at the edges and the fringes in the back. And as the Israelites came out of Egypt, the weak, those who were, you know, weak, the kids, the crippled people, the old ladies, they would kill them. They would pick them off. An utterly detestable action. And God says, you know what? You are not going to do that to my people. And he said, this is my judgment on them. Therefore, you go kill them. That is why what is behind this, because of what they did to his people. And so he told Saul, go out and do this. This is the will that I'm telling you and the command I give you. So in verse 4, Saul gathered the people together and numbered them in Telaim, 200,000 foot soldiers, 10,000 men. And Saul came to a city of Amalek and lay in wait in the valley. Then Saul said to the Kenites, go depart, get down from among the Amalekites, lest I destroy you with them. For you showed kindness to all the children of Israel when they came up out of Egypt. So the Kenites departed from among the Amalekites, and Saul attacked the Amalekites. And he, in verse 8, he also took Agag, king of the Amalekites, alive, utterly destroyed all the people with the edge of the sword. But Saul and the people spared Agag and the best of the sheep, the oxen, the fatlings, the lambs, and all that was good, and were unwilling to utterly destroy them. But everything despised and worthless, that they utterly destroyed. So what happened again? God gave them a strict command, and Saul all of a sudden said, well, you know, there are some good things here. The nice, you know, we're invading this town, and I see a Lamborghini over here, and I see a Porsche over there. I'll destroy the Toyotas, but I will keep the sports cars, is kind of what he said. And notice what he says when he justifies why he did this. He goes in verse 10, it says, now the word of the Lord came to Samuel, saying, I greatly regret that I have set up Saul as king, for he has turned back from me, following me, and has not performed my commandments. And it grieved Samuel, and he cried out to the Lord all night. So when Samuel rose early in the morning to meet Saul, it was told Samuel, saying, Saul went to Carmel, and indeed he has set up a monument. He's gone around, passed by, gone down to Gilgal. So Samuel went to Saul, and Saul came to him. And what did he say? He came out with great pretense and said, blessed are you of the Lord. I have performed the commandments of the Lord. He's already proclaiming his innocence right off the bat. I've done what God said for me to do. Blessed are you, you're servant of God. Bless you. Samuel said, well, what then is the bleating of the sheep in my ears and the lowing of the oxen which I hear? What's this noise that I hear? And what did Saul say? You can see this progression. Again, it says in the beginning, Saul and the people took. And then Saul says, they, the people, they brought them from the Amalekites. Whoo, wasn't, boy, try to tell them, keep your hands off. They brought them from the Amalekites. For the people spared the best of the sheep and the oxen. What for? Here's a great reason. To sacrifice to the Lord your God. The rest we've utterly destroyed. We thought it was a good idea. If we would keep some of the good ones, and we'll bring them back, and we'll sacrifice to God. Once again, does that almost sound like it's a good idea? It even almost sounds like it's a plausible thing to do. But what was the response? In verse 16, Samuel said to Saul, be quiet. He told him to shut up. And he said, I will tell you what the Lord said to me last night. The Lord already knew what was going on here, already knew what was inside of Saul. And then so Saul said, speak on. And so Samuel said, when you were little in your own eyes, you were you not the head of the tribes of Israel? And did not the Lord anoint you king over Israel? Now the Lord sent you on a mission, said, go and utterly destroy the sinners, the Amalekites, and fight against them until they are consumed. That was the command and the will of God. Why did you not obey the voice of the Lord? Why did you swoop down on the spoil and do evil in the sight of the Lord? And Saul said to Samuel, but I have obeyed the voice of the Lord, and I have gone on the mission on which the Lord sent me, and I have brought back Agag, and I have utterly destroyed. You can just hear him whining. at this point in time. I've done that. I did it. What are you talking about? But the people. Again, he's shifting the blame over and saying the people took of the plunder, the sheep and oxen, the best of the things that should have been destroyed, to sacrifice to the Lord your God in Gilgal. And you'll notice something that happens here too. The reasoning that he had on his own, he ascribes a godly motive to it. That is a very common thing that we do as people. We take, instead of purely seeking God's will to the fullest intent, we'll deviate, and then we will ascribe a godly thing to it and call it and declare it good. And this is exactly what Saul was doing. And that is not what God was looking for. God was looking for someone who would seek what God wanted and do it start to finish. So Samuel said, has the Lord, in verse 22, as great delight in burnt offerings as in obeying the voice of the Lord? So all of what Saul said about the sacrifices and things, Samuel says obedience is what matters here. Behold, to obey is better than sacrifice, and to heed than the fat of rams. For rebellion is as the sin of witchcraft, and stubbornness is as iniquity and idolatry. Because you've rejected the word of the Lord, he's also rejected you from being king. Wow, that is amazing. And the thing about it is, this is not just a one-time thing. If you look at what Saul was doing and where he was going, it was more along these lines. This was his mode of operating. And God said, I need somebody who is king who will seek to do my will start to finish. Now, what did Saul say, though? In verse 24, he says, I have sinned. I have transgressed the commandment of the Lord and your words. And it looks like he's repenting here, doesn't it? And he says, because I feared the people and I obeyed their voice. Now, therefore, please pardon my sin and return with me that I may worship the Lord. Now, why is he saying that? What's interesting here is that Saul never gave up the fact that he was all about himself. It was all about him and the position and how he looked in front of the people. It was not about doing what God asked him. It was about how he looked in front of the people. What the people thought of him. Is that not true? The people scattered from him. Uh-oh, I'm losing it. I'm going to go do this now. And what happened here is he feared the people. And he listened. He heeded what they said. And now when he's saying, please pardon my sin and return with me, he's not saying that because he's really sorry. He's saying, so it looks like everything is okay. I want you to come back with me so that the people see that you're worshiping with me. That what you just said about God rejecting me, the people won't know about that. I would like for you to show your face with me, please. It was not about repentance. It was still about what he looked like. Samuel said in verse 26, I will not return with you, for you have rejected the word of the Lord, and the Lord has rejected you. And Samuel turned to go away, and Saul seized the edge of his robe, and it tore. And he said, the Lord has torn the kingdom of Israel from you today and has given it to a neighbor of yours who is better than you. And also the strength of Israel will not lie nor relent, for he's not a man. Saul said it again in verse 30, I have sinned. What did he say? Yet honor me now, please, before the elders of my people and before Israel, and return with me that I may worship the Lord your God. Again, it was how did he look in front of the people? Please come back and worship with me. There was not real repentance here, if you look at what's going on here. And so Saul relented. He went back, but he also said, Agag, come here. And Agag came in verse 32 and said, surely, you know, don't have any hard feelings. The bitterness of death is past. And then Samuel hacked him to pieces and finished what God had requested. Before the Lord is what that means. He did the will of the Lord there. And Samuel went up, and he never saw Saul again. Now what we find is, this is where that statement comes from, that God is seeking someone, a man after his own heart, who will do his entire will. And you'll see that Saul kept God's commandments to a point. He kept it 90% of the time, until the pressure from the people was too much. Then he caved. And he still then, after he did this mixture of things, claimed that he did God's will. And he was always concerned with the people. And you know what? The results were mixed and in the end, very bad. Okay? It is not about, well, God will understand that I had the right intent, I'm just going to deviate. This example teaches us that God wants us to seek His will and to do it 100%. One of the problems that happened here is human reasoning entered the picture. Human reasoning. Saul did that very thing. He obeyed God to a point, and when he saw things collapsing around him and it looked like it wasn't going to work or it was a certain way, he made a judgment call himself. He said, I think God will understand. I will just do this. He knows what situation I'm in. It's hard being me. It's hard being king. And the pressure of the people got to me. And he made a decision. And you know, that is completely human reasoning. And I think if we look at it and are honest with ourselves today, human reasoning is one of the biggest things that can infiltrate us. Because the way society is, and the whole there's a whole bunch of ideas and schemes and things that we come up with and we latch onto, and they take the place of fully seeking God and what He desires, His will, and His intent of what He is looking for. It should not be what we settle and we think is okay. It's the other way around. Every step, we should ask God to show me Your will, show me Your way more perfectly. Teach me, show me where my heart is not right with You and where my ideas are not right with what You want. That is seeking God's will throughout inside of us, and it must start inside of us. There's a scripture in the New Testament that talks about people coming in the end time deceiving and being deceived. And it's very interesting that those who do the deceiving are deceived themselves, because it's a cycle. If you self-deceive, you will be deceived by things. Therefore, as I spoke about last time, spirit and in truth on the inside of us is very key principle to think about. And here, to seek to do God's will 100% inside of us is a very key principle here. And you'll see that Saul was not teachable. He was not teachable. He had settled in his mind what he thought, and the idea that he settled on, that it was correct, that it was right. And he reasoned it enough that he got stuck there. And Samuel told him many times what he was doing was wrong. And he still did not listen. He still had a reason. And to the day he died, I bet you he still thought he was okay with it. That is human reasoning. And what human reasoning does, if we allow it to stick, will lead to unteachability in us. Unteachability ends up in disobedience. Disobedience, as was said here, is the same as rebellion and witchcraft. It's that weighted that heavily. Now, you contrast this with David. And every time we talk about David, people say, oh, well, he sinned. David sinned. Yes, he did. He did sin. He did drift a part of his life. But when God showed it to him and he got it, he got it. And he deeply repented. And God let him know and gave him a very large punishment for that very thing. But he got it. He was teachable when he saw it and he repented deeply. Now, let's contrast an example with David. The same type of thing happened with David, too. And let's see what David did. Now, just by speaking about them, there's two occasions where he had the opportunity to kill Saul. There's a person chasing him, trying to kill him. And on these occasions, one, they were in a cave, and Saul went to go to the bathroom. They were hiding in the cave. And if you looked at it, it would look like, well, you know what? This person who's trying to kill you, God just delivered him to you. And you know what? The people around him, what did they do? They used their human reasoning, and they said the same thing to him. There was not one person there who said, don't kill Saul. The people, notice that again, were telling David, look, God, it's God's will. This is God's will for you. Saul's delivered right there in your hands. Rise up and kill him. Now, if you think about this, David had a choice. He could listen to that, and he could kill Saul. And guess what? He would short-circuit him running in the wilderness for his life for many years. He could put that to an end, and he could become king. That's what choice he could have, and every single person around him had reasoning to say, go for it, do this. Now, what did David do? David firmly knew that, yes, he was anointed, but he also cannot strike down God's anointed because Saul was anointed. That it was for God to take care of. And if that meant that he had to go in the wilderness for 3 or 4 more years, running for his life, that's the choice he would make to his detriment. Saul never made that choice. It was always expedient for what worked out well at the time. David, to the nth degree, made the choice to do God's will. It's easy to read over that, but think about putting yourself in that circumstance where nobody around you is telling you the right thing. And it would seem logical that God just delivered him to you. So let's look at the one example over in 1 Samuel 30. 1 Samuel 30. An interesting example happens here that's very similar to the one that Saul went through. 1 Samuel chapter 30, verse 1. And let's see how David handled the same type of a situation here. 1 Samuel 30, verse 1, it says, "Now it happened when David and his men came to Ziklag on the third day that the Amalekites had invaded the south of Ziklag and attacked Ziklag and burned it with fire and had taken captive the women and those that were there from small to great. They did not kill anyone, but they carried them away and went their way." And so David and his men came to the city. This is where they had gone out to battle, and they were coming back to the city where all their families were. And there it was. They came back from battle, burned with fire, and their wives, their sons, their daughters had been taken captive. And David and the people who were with them lifted up their voices and wept until they had no more power to weep. This is an unbelievably hard situation. And David's two wives, Ahinoam and the Jezreelitess, and Abigail, the widow of Nabal, the Carmelite, had been taken captive. Now David was greatly distressed, for the people spoke of stoning him. Because of the soul of all the people was grieved, every man for his sons and daughters. Now, this is a situation that is just like the one Saul was in before, isn't it? There is this place that's very hard in battle, where something very hard is happening, and the people are at a place where they're about to riot, split, and stone David. Same thing as Saul encountered. And the people, again, wanted David's head. They were about to stone him for this. Now notice David's reaction. Did he first say, "Yeah, let's go do it. Let's go. We're going to get him. I promise you, we'll get him." First thing. But David strengthened himself in the Lord his God. Sorry, there's a... And then what did he do secondly? Secondly, he said to Abiathar the priest, "Please bring the ephod here to me." Now, why did he do that? So he had to strengthen himself first. But wouldn't you say, okay, I've strengthened myself. Let's go get him. Come on, guys, let's go. What did he ask? He inquired of the Lord, saying, "Shall I pursue this troop or not? Shall I overtake them?" He asked, "At this time, what is your will for me to do here?" Now, think about that versus Saul. Think about the pressure he was under, and think about what he did. Those men are not the same. That is why, when you start to look at David's life, he was called a man after God's own heart. And God answered him and said, "Pursue, for you shall surely overtake them and without fail recover all." And so verse 9, David went, he and 600 men who were with him came to the brook Bezor, where they stayed were left behind. But David, well, he came to the brook Bezor, where those who stayed were left behind. But David pursued, he and 400 men, for 200 stayed behind, who were so weary that they could not cross the brook. They found an Egyptian, they gave him bread, they gave him water, they asked him, "Who do you belong?" And he led them to the people. David said in verse 15, "Can you take me down to this troop?" Promised to spare his life. And then verse 16, when he brought him down, they were spread out over the land, eating and drinking and dancing because of all the great spoil they had taken. Then David attacked from twilight until the evening of the next day. Not a man of them escaped, except for some men who rode out on camels. David recovered all that the Amalekites had carried away. David rescued his two wives, and nothing of theirs was lacking, either small or great, sons or daughters, spoil or anything. David recovered all. Then David took all the flocks and herds that had driven with the livestock, and he said that they had, and this is now David's spoil. And you'll notice that when God is in there and you seek his will and he's part of it, they didn't lose a thing. Initially, this looks horrible. They did not lose a thing. When God was with them and he sought his will, those are two different results. Let me tell you, Saul won some battles, but lost a lot of things and people and family. David, in this case, lost nothing. That is a different result. It's not by accident that's written there. It's not by accident that David is called a man after God's own heart to seek to do his entire will. And then they were coming back. when they were coming back to meet the people that stayed behind, verse 22, it says, all the wicked and worthless men who were with them answered and said, because they didn't go with us, we will not give them any of the spoil that we've recovered except for every man's wife. You know, we were not going to give them anything extra. They didn't come out with us. But David said, my brethren, you shall not do so with what the Lord has given us, who has preserved us and delivered into our hands the troop that came against us. For who will heed you in this matter? And he made a decree that for, you know, whose part goes down to battle, so be whose part who stays by the supplies. Not only did he say that, but in verse 26, he went to the people around him and gave gifts of the spoils. Can you see something different, start to finish? When the people came back and wanted to say, ah, well, those people didn't go out with us, David said, it shall not be unrighteousness. Righteousness shall be here in this land. We will give equal amounts to them. Not only that, we're going to give to the people around us. Start to finish, he had God's will, his mind, in his mind, and he did not allow the people to do evil or do things that were deviating from that. And you'll notice the outcome, the results were 100% different. What I propose to you is that, do we live that way or not? And what I would propose is that we are not going to reap the full benefits of living by God until we live like David lived, seeking 100% the will, start to finish. I think sometimes we live with mixed results and we say it's just the trials of life. Life's that way. You know, I've got ups and downs and I've got this, but you know what? God has put laws and things in place that when you seek and obey to the intent and what he's looking for and seek his will, not our own reasoning, you will reap the 100% results of that. You know, and on a personal example, a note, a few years ago, you know, the church came out with a ruling on third tithe, where, you know, it made it sound like, you know, well, you know, a lot of taxes and a lot of services take care of a lot of those things. So it's kind of an optional thing is what it sounded like. And I read that and I thought, oh, phew, you know, that sounds good to me. Sounds like a, you know, sounds reasonable. I think there are a lot of services out there, Social Security, other things that take care of people. No problem. So one of those years, a few years ago, I thought, well, you know what, that's fine. The church has said that. I'll go along with it. Sounds good to me, doesn't it? Sounds good. And so I didn't do third tithe that year. And one of the things that happened, and it didn't dawn on me till 3 years later what was going on. It took me 3 years to get my nose rubbed into it. But my job turned south. All of a sudden, I fell out of favor at work. You know, and I had to change groups. I didn't get a raise for 2 years. Not that, you know, some people get raised for a long time, but it's kind of an automatic thing sometimes when you work in the company I work in. Didn't get anything for 2 years. Got bad reviews. I was down to where I had no allies, and I told my wife I could be fired tomorrow, and nobody would care. I'd be gone. I got down to that point. It dawned on me as I was praying about it, you know, what? I just thought, well, that's life, trials, up, down, correct? Don't we think that? But you know, I was not aligned with a principle that God had that was real, no matter what somebody said or reasoned or I reasoned. And so I thought, you know what, the next year, no matter what, I'm going to keep third tithes to me, no matter what. And so I did. I set aside money that I had so that I could make the ends meet and make the payments, and I, you know, sold a bunch of stuff, took bonus or anything, put it aside, and went through third tithe that year. That was this past year for me. And sorry, it's hard to be open, but it's the only way to be. And you know, the past year was the most amazing year. I got two raises at work. I've never gotten two raises in one year that equaled 10%. I bought a house I never could afford. Its value went up 10% the day I bought it. My wife and family and I sat down at the end of the third tithe year and wrote down the blessings that we could think of that year. And we had 2.5 pages of stuff. And I got a job in Australia. And God opened a door in Australia, and we're near. So to me, the point was made, and it was a hard 3 years, but I had reasoned like Saul. And let me say and propose to you, sometimes we accept the things in life as that's just what life is, and we have mixed results, but we never step back to take a look. Am I fully, with 100% of my heart, not reasoning, but seeking what God wants? The outcome, let me assure you, is 100% different, and you will know it. And I would encourage you over the next few years that you always take a look and you always pray what David prayed, to please show me your way, not here's what I think is the right thing, here's what I think is what the right way is that I am going to do, but please show me, show me, show me, so that my heart, where it's not pure, can be pure. You will get results like Saul if you live like Saul, and we write those off. But God's way is sure. And I think that you could unlock a lot more if you align yourself a lot more with what God really wants and what He intends. So take a hard look at our lives and our own lives. It's not the intentions. It has nothing to do with how good your intentions are. And think, what do you look more like? Is it like Saul? You have flashes of brilliance. You have failures. You mostly obey God. Waves of righteousness and indignation sweep over, and you go, I'm going to make this decree. Then it fades, and you end up with mixed results in your life and those around you. Or is it more like David? Adversity in life is navigated with God's help. It's there, but it's navigated with God's help. Seeking to obey God, even though it will hurt you. You know, all of my ends were met during my third tithe year. I finished it, and all of a sudden, I couldn't make my ends meet as well all of a sudden. It's the strangest thing you've ever seen. I'm telling you that when God's way is in your life on some things, that you can't explain it. He will sustain you and it completely. And then David ended up with blessings and an ever-increasing strength and reliance on his Creator, and his kingdom was established and built a certain way, and his enemies were put down. This is the path that it goes. Saul's path went this way and down. David went this way and up. There is a difference. So some of the things to think about is that mostly obeying is not good enough. God says He's looking for those who like a man after his own heart, to do his entire will, start to finish, his will, not our own. Human reasoning, when it comes to these things, feels right. Feels so right, sounds so right, will look so right with everything around you. It just will feel like the right thing. But we will not reap the blessings and the benefits of God's way until we are wholeheartedly us changing to direct our ways towards Him. David prayed that over and over. Read the Psalms. Psalm 119, I'll just quote it to you. It says, "Blessed are those who keep His testimonies, who seek Him with a whole heart." Blessed, blessed. Not an accidental word, blessed. That means blessed in all you do. And then in verse 10, it says, "With my whole heart I have sought you. Oh, let me not wander from your commandments." And God designated this from the very beginning when He spoke in Deuteronomy 10:12. What does God require of you but to fear the Lord your God, to walk in all of His ways, to love Him, to serve the Lord your God with all your heart and all your soul? That's what He has said from the start to the finish. And a last couple of points here. I'll take just a couple more minutes to finish. But God prepares His servants for a period of time. If you want to be a servant of God and help out, is it a matter of, one, recognizing your talents, asking God to use you, learn how to give good messages, toss in some humor, some anecdotes, make good eye contact, then take the lectern by storm and become the most amazing speaker anybody's ever heard of? Is that the path to be a tool in God's hand? Well, let me tell you what I've learned. If you want to be a tool, you have to be prepared, and usually it's with suffering. Are you willing? There's no short circuit. Look at the people that God prepared in the Bible. David ran for 12 years before he became king with some of the hardest issues you could face. Moses was in the wilderness 40 years. Paul, 3.5. Abraham had to leave and wander. Those were not easy things. God prepared leaders, and usually through suffering. You have to know it's not you. You have to give up power and prestige. If you want power, prestige, and position, you will not be a tool in God's hands. If you give that up, then you can start. And you have to seek His will and His glory every time if you want to see the fruits of God. Otherwise, you will see your own fruits and your own efforts, no problem. You'll be like Saul, some good, some bad. If you want to see the fruits of God, you have to give Him glory and seek His will in everything you say and you do. It's not a prestigious thing, but it is deeply satisfying. It is deeply satisfying. David was trained. All of these people were trained over the years. And one other point is that spiritual gifts are not the same as natural abilities and talents. A lot of times we talk about, you know, just need to know what my talents are and then I can help. God gives us abilities. But when it comes to the spiritual things of God, those are spiritual gifts that are given. You will not see the fruits of that unless God gives spirits in those things. Talents and abilities are good, but don't confuse the two. They're not the same thing. I remember when I was going to be ordained, thinking and praying and talking about wanting the gift of healing. You know, probably for obvious reasons. There's a lot of pain and suffering out there, and also to see my son healed. I wanted that. Mr. Luke ordained me. He asked God to provide the gifts that are according to His will. And I appreciate that. God gave different gifts than I wanted. But it was what He needed. My son will be healed someday. God gave the gift to speak and to teach. It is not me. It is not my training. It is not Microsoft. I was a shy person growing up, and I always have been. But the gifts of God produce the fruits of God, and it is not me. So if you want to produce and be a tool in God's hands, you ask Him for the gifts that are according to His will for you, for what the people need, not for you, for what the people need. And He will grant It'll be different probably than what you think. And another thing is to learn from those who come before you. And I won't have time to read this, but jot down 2 Timothy 3:10 through 17. Paul told Timothy to carefully follow doctrine, manner of life, purpose, faith, long-suffering, love, perseverance, everything that Paul was and embodied in his life. And if you go back through church history and look, and I don't mean just recent church history, I mean from the time, first century onward, you'll see that every idea you think that you have come up with that's new is not new. Gnostic beliefs, different ideas have been around and around and around. And I could point out through church history, ideas that you think are brand new, invented here today, have been there through the centuries and are not new. They just keep getting recycled. And it is very important to learn from the spiritual leaders that come before you. It is a very important thing, it seems like, in our society that we think, well, you know, a minister is just an average person like you and I, but God gives words to a minister. And Paul says, emulate the words, manner, life, and everything. And I've appreciated the Luker's example. And I've learned a lot from you guys. Your patience, the positive outlook you have, and your general approach, I appreciate that. I wouldn't have known that before. But it's important that we don't just reinvent the wheel all the time and think we're coming up with new things. It is important to learn from those that come before. There is a stability. People have gone through things and they have seen it time and time again. And it is important to be humble enough to listen. And I appreciate your support and for putting someone, having patience with someone like me with spiky hair and all. And I very much appreciate that. And gentlemen of the church, it is time to step up and lead. There are things to do here that require you to be wholehearted for God, not to jockey for a position, but to be wholeheartedly seek God's will. And gentlemen, it is time to lead. God is looking for those who will do his entire will. There are things to be done on every level. And men, ladies, it is time to step up. It is time to seek God's will and to step in and to help. And I had to make a decision many years ago because I was one who sat back and said, well, there's this problem and that and these people and that, and I can see there's a problem. And I could identify every problem under the sun with the church and the people in it and the government and everything happening. And at some point, my wife and I said, that's great, we can identify things, but when do you step in and help? It's not, if you're waiting for somebody up here or over here to do it, it's not going to happen, gentlemen. It is time to step up and to lead. And as I said, think of David, not Saul, as the example. Watch out for heresies, for strange ideas, for wolves seeking to devour the brethren in the flock. And it is time, again, in our lives to seek 100% with our whole hearts. As God is seeking, he's looking, like he said, I am looking for someone to lead my people who is a man after my own heart. And that was David.